poi si sparisce col mondo.
Good afternoon. Today, we're going to open session joint committee on, on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is May 10th, 2017, and we're going to be having a public hearing on SB 5535, Department of Revenue, Consumer Experiences, Employee Engagement, and Key Performance Measures. We have the director here, and we also have the deputy director here, but before we get started, LFO.
Mr. Co-Chair, LFO doesn't have much to add. We did run across some KPM information for the Internal Revenue Service, just as background for the agency or for the subcommittee to look at, but it's posted on the website and OLIS, and we won't go into it in any detail, Mr. Co-Chair. So, other than that, I think.
Okay. So, director, please. And welcome back for the, what, is this 199th time? You're going to show the fingers on my hand. We've been here this many times.
Co-Chair Manning.
Go ahead, please.
Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. I'm Nia Ray, the director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. I have with me Chris Couch, who's the deputy director of the department. Today we are presenting on our key performance measures, customer service and employee engagement. Both customer service and employee engagement have a corresponding KPM, so the discussion of those two topics will also be embedded in the conversation we have about our KPM. So it's really one discussion that we're having today. Before I begin going through each of our KPMs, the deputy director will give a little history of how we got here.
Very good. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. I'm Chris Couch, the deputy director for the Oregon Department of Revenue. So I do want to provide a little bit of history. Back in 2013, actually, when we met with this committee, we gave a heads up that we didn't think all of the measures, the key performance measures that we had at that time, were the best ones that reflected the work that we did. So we began a process at that point in time of taking a look at what we had, determining, are there measures in there that are continue to reflect the work of the organization? Are there ones that need to be deleted? So in 2014, the director at the time came back and gave a report during the February session in the even-numbered year and let them know that we had, for the most part, identified new key performance measures. Then during the 2015 legislative session, we did, based on this committee's work and the information we presented, the committee deleted seven previous key performance measures and added six new ones. So what you will get here today is that new set of key performance measures, the six new ones plus five that we carried through that process that we felt still reflected our work. So I just wanted people to know that some of these measures are newer and haven't been seen by this committee before, and some of them have been seen by the committee before, to the extent that you may have been here in the past or are new overall. The other thing I wanted to let people know is that we currently have two internal audits going on around performance measurement. One audit is really about, are our performance measures meeting our need to have good management information, and what might we need to change about the process we have in place and the measures we have in place to better reflect the work and to be able to use the data and information to make informed decisions. The second internal audit that's happening is one in coordination with the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Consumer and Business Services to look at data integrity of the key performance measures. So part of that is a reflection of the fact that part of the reason we deleted seven of the key performance measures during the last legislative session that was approved by you all is because we had data integrity issues with the measurement. We couldn't replicate the data that we had been previously reporting, and so that was problematic. We also felt that that was part of the issue. Other issues were, like, we had measures that didn't really reflect our work, and I'll give you an example. we had a measure that said percentage of property taxes collected. Well, we have a supervisory role over the property tax system, but really property taxes are collected at the local level. There isn't any work that the Oregon Department of Revenue does to collect property taxes. So in that regard, the measure didn't reflect our work. It reflected the work of the counties, right? And that didn't seem appropriate. So those are some reasons that we shifted measurements, why we have some internal audits going on right now. And I'm going to turn it over at this point in time to Director Ray to go through the measurements, and we're here to answer your questions as we go.
So the Department of Revenue currently has 11 KPMs, all of which we'll present to you today. I took the opportunity to highlight those that we did not meet, those goals that we did not meet during the most recent collection period. There is a mistake, however. Number 7 should be highlighted in red as well. So I apologize that that was not presented correctly, but there are 3 measures that we did not meet this year, 1, 4, and 7.
Okay, on the director, just to let you know that's online and stuff, 7 is highlighted.
Okay. The first KPM, average days to process a refund. The target for the department is 12 days average. As you'll see, from 2012 to 2015, we did meet that goal. In 2016, we had a few problems. We discussed those issues with you during our personal income tax presentation. Last year, there were issues with our front-end processing, and you'll remember, I think in yesterday's presentation, we kind of outlined those circumstances within which we had to manually enter certain returns, which returns required manual intervention as opposed to 2D barcoding or electronic submission. Unfortunately, our front-end processing created a situation where we had to manually enter more returns than we normally would. In addition, our Gentax system has a fraud manager within it. It was the first year of using our Gentax system for our personal income tax processes, and there was a glitch. Our fraud manager read a little beyond what it was supposed to and suspended certain returns that it shouldn't have, and there were quite a few that were in that grouping. So it slowed things down significantly. This year, we don't have those issues. We've corrected those issues. So we hope that when we report next, we will not have a 22-day average. That being said, we are moving toward slowing down processing simply for fraud purposes, for fraud review. That's a national trend. The IRS is averaging roughly 21 days to process returns simply because of, you know, the increased need for fraud review. So while we anticipate being less than 22, we may need to come back to you at some point and discuss that target to determine if it's realistic given the expectations and the needs we have as a department. The second KPM is the percentage of personal income tax returns filed electronically. The target is 82%. We exceeded that target by roughly 4%. There is a national trend as well, moving toward electronic filing. It's cheaper, it's easier, and we certainly recommend whenever possible that our tax-paying customer file electronically. In addition to electronic filing being cheaper and easier, for certain demographics, there are opportunities to file free electronically, and we're part of the Free File Alliance, which certain vendors are a part of, and it permits taxpayers in various demographics, whether it be income, veteran status, age, to file their tax returns for free.
Okay, Director, could you go back to the previous slide, please? Okay, so there is a little discrepancy on what we have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Co-Chair Manning, members of the department. Originally, the KPM was submitted with 16 days, I do believe.
Right.
It is 22. At the time we submitted that documentation to you, it was 16.
Okay.
We've since been able to correct that with new information, and so it's 22. That is the accurate slide. I apologize for that.
Okay.
KPM number 3, employee training per year. Our goal is for 60% of our employees to achieve 20 hours or more of training. We have exceeded that goal at 74%. We made it easier for employees to capture their training hours and have kept a more close account of those hours. And I'll allow Chris to talk a little bit more about training.
Yes. So part of this also has to do, and it would be expected, especially for the last 2 years, that there would be a spike in training, largely due to the core system replacement project and the number of hours that staff put in order to get up to speed on that system. So we did achieve over our goals, which we hadn't, and the core system replacement training helped us get over the top, but we did also put an emphasis on training and development for our staff to ensure that they had the appropriate skill sets necessary in order to not only do their work technically, but to do their job on a regular basis.
Our fourth KPM, this is the customer service KPM. And the official title is that the percent of customers rating satisfaction with the agency's customer service. So there would be percent of taxpaying customers that rate our service either excellent or good. The customer service KPM is based on our customer service survey. Taxpayers can access the customer survey in one of three ways, either by phone, the IVR system. They call for a service, and they can be connected to the customer service survey to take the survey, which consists of 6 questions. Online, there is an online component of our survey. And finally, we have implemented iPads in our major offices, field offices, so that where there is in-person assistance, they can access the customer service survey in real time. Each question has its own goal. And its own percentage. The overall category is not an average of the other 5. It's its own question. So taxpayers are asked about their overall experience of the department. You'll notice that in 2013, we are above 73 in all of the categories. In 2014, there is a change. I'd like to explain a little bit about how we got there. And why we see such a decline from 2013 to 2016. I'd also like to emphasize with the assistance of the deputy what we're doing to mitigate some of that. So in 2013, our customer survey process was entirely manual. If a taxpayer called for some tax service from the department, at the end of the conversation, a customer service rep would ask that taxpayer if they were interested in taking a customer service survey. The customer service rep at that time would read the questions to the individual, notate the answers, and then submit them to the department. If an individual received services in person from a field office, there was a manual survey that was offered to the individual. That individual completed the survey. It was placed in a box. In 2013, we had roughly 182 respondents. And I believe the duration of the survey was roughly 2 weeks. It was an incredibly short period that we actually collected data in 2013. So that's 78% we are proud of. But there's a big distinction between the pool of respondents in 2014 and the method that we used in 2014. In 2014, we implemented the IVR service, the IVR option, I'm sorry, to record customer survey satisfaction. So that 33% reflects 3,000 respondents and 11 months of data. So if we look at 2013 and 2014, if we take the glass half full approach, then there wasn't a fall off the cliff. That 78.5 to 33 would indicate, without any context, that there was a significant decline in customer service. Well, given the difference in pool and the method we use to actually arrive at the numbers, that would be inconclusive. We're not comparing apples to apples.
Senator? Excuse me for stepping out for just a second, a kind of a pivotal time in this. Other than the survey, do you track, I'm going to just take Deanna, only because we have her in our system back in the office as the goddess of fixing stuff. And do you get any of her logs? Because this would assume that somebody was pleased enough with the service to sit down and fill out the form, or that they were so angry that they hunted up the form. I'm trying to figure out, do you track any of Deanna's work? Because Deanna fixes stuff, and her case file might be a good gauge of folks that wouldn't be motivated to fill out a form.
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, we actually do. Deanna is, I like your title better, but the official title she has is the arm of the director. So when I receive a complaint, it goes to Deanna. Deanna sends it to the appropriate individual for correction. And then I confer with Deanna to make sure that was indeed, it was either handled or update the status. There was a report that was offered to the LFO, and I believe you've received it, that outlined the categories of complaints that we've received over the past, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years. We track it for 2 years, but we were able to extend it beyond that, I think, in that limited instance. And that was a record of roughly 700 complaints that we'd received. And we certainly take that seriously, and we certainly track it. Again, I'd like to offer some perspective there, though. Those 700 complaints, we receive roughly 2 million returns every year. And so that's a very small fraction of complaint that we're receiving. That doesn't mean that there aren't people out there that are dissatisfied. I'm not, you know, underestimating our need to ensure the satisfaction of our customers. It's good, though, to have perspective with respect to the entire volume of population that we serve and the numbers that are associated with determining whether we're meeting the need.
Thank you. Follow up. That was very helpful. I understand that the goddess of fixing stuff may have new assignments. Is there a goddess in waiting?
Chair Manning, Senator, there are several goddesses in waiting, as a matter of fact.
Cool.
Because the goddess has taken on so much for the department, we needed several individuals to fill her shoes. So Exanne Culver, who's an OPA 3 with the department, you may have worked with her, a very competent individual. She will be handling the SPA programs, the special programs. Lois Williams, who's been managing our administrative rules process, also a CPA, will be managing our personal income tax legislation. She's been working very closely with Deanna. Deanna has trained her.
Good.
Very competent individual as well. We also have
Jeff Henderson
that you've worked with, who will remain in the corporate realm, handling our corporation legislation. And then finally, we have another individual, Shannon Ball, who's moved into Lois's position, handling administrative rules. Now, this is a temporary fix. This is a temporary rotation. As you may be aware, collections is a big issue, and we needed our heavy hitters focusing on collections and all the responsibilities that we will be assuming with respect to collections. So in addition to that, she'll be recommending to the director the advantages or disadvantages of consolidating our collection activities within one unit. As I shared with you early, maybe in this presentation and others, that was one of the first observations that I made when I was hearing from Representative Gomberg and others about our collection efforts, that maybe we needed to unify it to get a better handle on how our collections efforts are working. So I've put that into action. I have Deanna heading it up, and we'll see what happens.
Cool. Thank you.
So that was just to put 2013 and 2014 into context, because there was some concern that our customer service efforts had taken a dive. Now, glass half empty, if we were to compare apples to apples, we may have been at roughly 33% in 2013 if we had used the same measures. That would have been consistent. That still leaves us at 33%, 29%, and 13%. We've taken measures, however, to engage external participation, external stakeholders and vendors to try and alleviate some of our concerns about our customer service measure. Chris Kautz has been a part of that, and so she'll walk you through our relationships with OSU and Propeller, two vendors that we've contracted with.
Thank you. So in 2015 and 2016, we did contract with OSU to do a customer service survey, largely because we were concerned about the number of responses that we had. As Director Ray pointed out, in 2014 we had just 3,000. And in, I can't remember the figure for 15 and 16.
1423 for 15.
1423 for 15, and we're not sure what the number is for 16. But that is also a very low number in relationship to the number of phone calls we get on an annual basis. And so we contracted with OSU to not only do these same questions, but to expand the questions to see if we couldn't get a little bit more understanding about that, what was going on. It is clear that we have work to do. That the OSU survey, while the numbers were better, does support the fact that there's still work to be done in this arena. So what we did in 2015 is we started the conversation about what are we going to do about this. So we have hired a third-party vendor by the name of Propeller. Joanne talked about that on her first day when she was in here back in phase one. And they have come in and helped us kind of take our scattered way of gathering data and consolidate that. Director Ray talked about the fact now that we have three different inputs into our survey. We do have still the phone input as well as the online survey, and then the field offices also have the iPads now that people can take the survey right then, right when it happens. So we have started to gather data as a result at the end of December 16, and we have just seen the first quarter results. They are better because we are doing a better job of, one, we did training with staff in order to say, we got to get back on the customer service side of the world, right? And the way that you help staff do that is make sure that they understand that it's a priority for you and that you give them the tools to get them back to where you want to be. So in 2016, there was quite a bit of training done with a lot of the call center staff in order to help get back to that notion. In addition, we have asked staff directly to, on a regular basis, as they do interact with people on the phone, to actually respond to the survey. We ask them to take the survey. We don't leave it to chance. We actually put the pitch out there to say, we've helped you today. I think the other thing that's really clear and should be very clear to you all is the data that's here in front of you between 2012 and 2016 was really specific for the most part to personal income tax and to specifically those folks that were engaging with the tax services unit, which is our main 800 number. We have now expanded the customer service survey for all divisions and all programs that have outside stakeholder content. So we will also be looking at property tax division and business division as a result, which is appropriate for an organization of our size rather than having it be all focused in one area to look across all of our call centers and all of the work that's being done.
For professionals that do customer satisfaction surveys, do they have any metric that discounts the fact that I don't imagine folks start out liking the Department of Revenue? If you're calling a warm, fuzzy agency that does warm, fuzzy things, that's one thing, but not so much you guys. And so is there a discount factor?
Senator, Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I wish there were. There isn't. When the customer service measurement was put together, every state agency does it, and every state agency does it the same way, regardless of the role that you play, whether you're a compliance organization such as us or a parks organization that brings about that.
Okay, one more. What? If I heard you correctly, Chris, what you or Ms. Couts, what you just said is, this is how state government does it. I hate that answer. You ran DAS for a little while.
I did.
Why don't we change stuff? Why don't if there's a smarter, better way to do it? If professionals are willing to guide the state in the latest techniques for anything. Why should the default answer be that's how we do it?
Senator Manning and Senator Johnson, I think there's factors to be considered in that. I think there was the idea that people wanted to look at this factor over time. And so this has been in place, I think, since 2004. So the notion of a longevity kind of component to it. We also do this key performance work between as an overall component of the budget process between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And so I think it's a matter of having the conversation about priority and taking it on, to be frank.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon. This is a fascinating KPM, and I have to say that the numbers are stark.
Yes.
And I noticed that while our actuals are declining, that our targets remain constant. I guess my question would be to you that maybe we need a third measurement. If you said to me we plan to reach our target next year, I'd say thank you and good luck. So. But my question is, what do you anticipate? If I hear you say we've got work to do, we're doing better, we anticipate improvements, what is a reasonable goal that we might be looking at in some of these categories that are running about 20% of target right now? What's a reasonable goal for a year or 2 years from now?
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, I hope, personal hope, not checking in with everybody that's sitting behind me, that we're up in the 70% range in that arena somewhere. But that's probably a stretch goal for us, given our starting point. So maybe to hit 50 and then go from there.
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, we analyze our data and collect our data and analyze it on a quarterly basis. And, of course, we haven't completed the fiscal year, so we don't have the totals for all of the fiscal year. But at the same time, we do have some preliminary data. Last quarter was the first quarter that we had both the IVR and online components to impact our collection and our scoring. Mm-hmm. And this is very preliminary. This could change next quarter. But we found ourselves in the 70s or around 70. Now, the prior quarters were not 70. They were IVR alone. So we still need a few more quarters to determine whether this online component is a saving grace, if that's what pushed us over, or if there are other variables that created that spike. I hope that that's where we are and will remain in the 70s. We just need a bit more time to determine how consistent we are. I think 50 as a new director is safe. And I would actually appreciate 50. I don't know if 50 is the magic number. I will say that preliminary data does show that there is hope.
All right, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The fifth KPM, effective taxpayer assistance, involves KPM-4. And this is a weighted measure. The goal is 56. We met the goal at 60.7, but it is a weighted measure. 40% of the goal is refers to calls with a wait time less than 5 minutes. before being answered. 50% is successful self-help, which refers to our where's my refund lookup. So if an individual does attempt to locate their refund and they're successful, they get something out of the venture, then it's deemed successful. If, however, there's no response or they aren't able to pull up any of the documentation, it is deemed unsuccessful. 10% is the customer service rating. So the overall customer service rating you saw on the prior slide is incorporated in this measure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have said this earlier. The qualifications for your call center people, are you using inmates? Are you using all state employees? What's the profile of your call center folks?
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, they are state employees that do the work on behalf of the 30-plus tax programs that we have. That initial 800 number, they try to answer questions on behalf of the 30 tax programs. If you get a letter that you owe a particular debt, you will go automatically to a different call center to address your specific concern. So we have four call centers inside the organization right now. They are all state employees. Depending on which call center you get, you may get a different classification of staff, but the main number, the 1-800 number that we have, those are considered public service representatives, so their job is to be that front line.
And Mr. Chair, I think we discussed with the agency, although I don't remember and I apologize, the possibility of having a practitioner hotline or a practitioner call center so that sophisticated tax preparers could speak to CPAs or sophisticated tax question answerers. And I don't know whether or not that's feasible.
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, that is certainly Representative Smith has introduced two bills this session to have us take a direct look at that. I think it's a conversation about how to redirect resources to have that available. We currently make available to tax professionals a line they can call into and leave a message, and we will try to get back to them within 24 hours so that we can take a look at their specific issue, right? A lot of times it's about making sure that the auditor, that they have a question about why is this audit this way, can get back to them. Or if it's a policy question, that policy staff can get to them. Because a lot of times, you don't know what the question is that you're going to get in. It could be to a specific audit that their client has, or it could be an interpretation of our administrative
sure.
rule.
Thank you.
KPM 6 and 7 relate to our property tax responsibilities. And number 6 is specifically for county level appraisal program equity and uniformity. And the goal here is to ensure that our appraisal rolls, the value on our appraisal rolls, and the real market value of properties are in alignment. The goal is to achieve uniformity between those values. The property tax division uses a formula. It's called the COD, and I will not get into the weeds of that. There are people here that can. But that COD provides a level, a number, that counties should fall beneath or at in order to assure uniformity and to ensure that the tax burden in the respective counties is being borne equally. So this target is 95%. 95% of the counties are either under or at the COD, and we've met our goal there. KPM 7 is a similar measure, but it refers to the department's appraisal of our centrally assessed and industrial properties. We did not meet our target our target of 20%. Largely in part because of the nature of the properties that we assess. Real market value assumes a certain level of activity of sales. Well, the type of properties that we assess and appraise aren't properties that move often. They're not residential properties. And so that creates a bit of a challenge in the way we do business, our mass appraisal processes, and our ability to stay within that COD level.
Director, would that be attributed to the three appraisal positions that you don't have that's creating that?
I do have an individual here that I'll bring up. I think there could be. We have one of the measures to remediate this issue is more on-site visits to assess these properties. I'm not sure if these three positions would directly impact that. So I'll ask.
No, it's okay. I'll get it.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Bronson Rueda, and I'm the Valuation Section Manager at the Department of Revenue. And so the question is, do these three positions impact our ability to impact our COD? The answer to that is yes. The positions that are under question go out and appraise properties in the field, and that's the type of work that we do in order to measure our COD, in order to calculate our COD.
Okay, so I would assume that there would be a huge argument in support of funding those three particular positions, especially if it's the lack of having them there is creating this much of a downfall or inability to accurately do the job out there. My understanding from yesterday is that we were going off of estimates, kind of shooting from the hips. And later on, when people filed a complaint or said that this is not right, then we were just giving them money back based on what they say. Pretty fair, somewhat.
Co-Chair Manning, I think you're talking about the appeal process.
Right.
And so, yes, if the process goes that we will value a piece of property, and if the taxpayer hasn't
issued. Sight unseen.
We do it both ways. We have a process called the industrial property return process where we do essentially a desk appraisal. And then during the appraisal season, we go out and get boots on the ground and conduct an appraisal visiting a site and doing market research. So you're talking about the appeal process where when we deliver a value to the counties assess the tax, and the taxpayer, if they have an issue with that value, then they'll appeal the value. And then that's when we come in, and if we have the resources, then we'll properly able to defend our appeal or work with a taxpayer to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. If we feel the taxpayer has a valid point and that our value is in error, then we'll recognize that and say, yes, you know what, you have a good point. We'll go ahead and adjust our value. But if we feel that our value is spot on, then we'll say, no, we think our value is good. And if there's no resolution, then eventually it can go to magistrate, tax court, and Supreme Court if need be.
Senator Johnson.
I have a bizarre question to ask you, and I apologize in advance. Given the burgeoning dope market in this state, do you have people trained to go out and assess? I don't know how you characterize this. It's not a farm crop necessarily. The medical world has gone to great pains to address the medical marijuana side as medicine. How are you treating the bazillions of dollars worth of plants that are sprouting up all over Jackson and Josephine County?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, that's a good question. That's what we refer to as an emerging market. And that's important because
it's generous.
that's important because emerging markets are always increasing our workload and adding more to our plate every year, as well as our accounts are increasing every year. So we have an ever increasing workload for industrial accounts that we appraise. But this is a new market, and so far it hasn't hit us as far as adding accounts to Department of Revenue. And so we haven't done any actual appraising of marijuana growing operations and processing plants, if you will. And we have plans to get training on this. In fact, at this summer, We have what's called a summer conference with the counties, and one of our activities is to visit different marijuana growing operations and processing plants in order to gain education on how to effectively appraise these new emerging markets.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to follow on one bizarre question with another one. a couple of us sit in a subcommittee that's been dealing with OLCC's budget, and they are looking for a huge number of new FTE. And there's a little bit of difference between whether these are going to be clerical-type functions, sitting at a desk pushing licenses through, or whether or not they're going to have a field function. And I think it's a legitimate dispute because they're telling us they're going to cross-train them so they'll be paper manipulators during part of the year and field personnel the rest. I jokingly said in committee, although I don't really mean it as a joke, that somebody shows up in a field in Josephine County in their little state-issued Prius to take a look at a field of marijuana that could be worth gazillions and guarded by who knows who. I don't know whether or not there's any opportunity for you and OLCC to do any cross-training or any shared people so that at a minimum, your person isn't going out by themselves, the OLCC person isn't going out by themselves, and if you're making a trip, you know, 10 hours round trip, why don't you get double bang for the buck and have an appraiser go with an inspector, even though they're looking for two different things? It might actually make life easier for the grower because instead of being visited serially by government folks, that you could do it sort of a one-stop shop. But it seems to me that it might also be perhaps safer for the inspectors to have the opportunity, or appraisers in your case, to travel in multiple people rather than just one. Just a thought. I mean,
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I think we'd definitely be open to having that conversation with OLCC, and it does sound like an efficiency and even a cost-saving mechanism. I think if there was any challenge that I'd be able to identify immediately is just scheduling. We have an appraisal schedule that we keep, but to the degree that we were able to coordinate that, I'm sure that the discussion would be something we'd all welcome.
Well, it seems to me that this is an emerging market with a bountiful revenue opportunity.
It's definitely growing.
Thank you. I like that.
And we are almost at the home stretch. We're on 8 of 11. our 8th KPM is direct enforcement dollars. It measures the cost of our direct enforcement activity, the cost to each legislatively approved budget dollar. So in this KPM, lower is better. Our goal is 33 cents of every dollar. We're at 28%. This includes dollars collected as a result of enforcement activity by employees within the DOR. Enforcement activity is constituted by amounts from deficiencies and estimated returns, not any voluntary payment or indirect activity is calculated in this measure. And it includes enforcement-related positions, which would include auditors, revenue agents, and suspense agents. KPM 9 is a similar KPM.
Mr. Chairman, Director, just to go back just a sec. Could you just tell us very briefly why the jump in 2014 to a higher cost per collection dollar?
Yes. Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, because our budget went up in 2014 to reflect the core system replacement project, and since that's part of our legislatively adopted budget and is directly related to the work of the staff, we incorporated that as part of the cost of funds.
So, you just factored in a percentage of the core system replacement to the cost of collecting delinquent debts?
We did.
KPM 9, similar to KPM 8, but it references the collection functions as opposed to the direct enforcement functions. Our goal there is 14 cents And we are at 12. Includes our collections positions. Finally, KPM 10 is the cost of assessing tax liabilities. So that is, there's no activity, there's no collection or direct enforcement. This is the cost of actually assessing the amounts that we later submit to taxpayers. So our goal there is 23 cents. We met our target at 21 cents. Finally, employee engagement, and I will turn it over to Chris.
So employee engagement, as you can see, has gone up and then it has come back down a little bit. We started employee engagement in 2013 and do it on an annual basis. We have a survey that we DAS administers for us on behalf of a third party that they have contracted with. We have asked the same questions every year. The survey is also used by a couple of different state agencies. So not only, and they have about 1,000 clients nationally. So we can look at our survey results, not only in relationship to some state agency partners, but to other private and public sector organizations. We do employee engagement because we think it's really important that employees are engaged in the organization that they work for and appreciate and understand how the work that they do adds value. And if you have that, research shows that you have greater productivity, less absenteeism, all those good things. So employee engagement is very common in the public and private sector, and we have switched over in 2013 to using this measure. It was going up over the course of time and then took a dip in 2016. That was not a surprise to some of us in the organization, largely because we took the survey and we take it at the same time every year, which is the end of April, first part of May. So if you think about our 2016 tax processing season, the fact that we had just implemented the personal income tax program at that point in time, and we were using all brand new tools, and we were having problems with our front-end processing and everything else, there was, to say there was angst in the organization would be an understatement. It was a tough time for the organization for the first 6 months of last year adapting to the new system and to meet taxpayer needs and goals. So I don't see a surprise. I think we just literally closed the survey yesterday for 2017. Initial figures show that we had about a 54% response rate. What the actual number is for 2017, I don't know yet. I will get that in about a month from now. We do share our employee engagement survey results at a town hall meeting on a regular basis. We also have instituted in the last couple of years, last year, and we will do it again this year, for a certain response rate, we will push the data and information down to the section and or unit level so that they can do more work on the ground with staff.
Can I ask a question? Employees engagement. I just want to reflect a little bit. When I was an assistant inspector general in the Army, we used to go around doing climate surveys, and I'm thinking that that's what this slide is about, kind of sampling how the employees feel about their jobs in terms of the facilities that they're at, the location, the supervisory staff, all of these other things, because they are the pulse of the organization. Is that what this is reflective of?
Chair Manning, the survey does look at various topics such as how is the organization being run? Do I have the tools and data I need to do my job? What about career development and opportunities inside the organization? So the survey does touch on those things. It's 31 questions. We've asked the same 31 questions over the course of the 4 years that we've been doing it. So it gives us a run of that to take a look. People have called it different things over time. I appreciate it's similar to what a climate survey would look at.
Okay, one more follow-up, and then I'll turn it over to Representative Gongberg. What is employee retainability? Are you experiencing a high volume of stabilization in employment, or are you having a systemic flow of overturn, which in turn will cause you to retrain, which is, you know, very costly and everything else?
So, Chair Manning, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but our employee turnover over the last couple of years has gone down. So we're probably somewhere in about the 5 to 7% range, which is pretty stable for an organization of our size. Turnover is to be expected. People move and leave and go to different jobs for all sorts of reasons. And so I think, as a good manager and leader inside the organization, ongoing training is an expectation that our managers have to factor in thinking about people leaving and how do we bring new people into the organization.
Okay. One final question. 30 questions. I would think that would be a lot. You know, I don't know if a lot of people would sit down and take the time to do 30 questions, unless most of them are yes or no. I'm just putting it out there. Representative Gongberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to go back to KPM 9, if we could. Okay. That's the cost of collection. And we've spent some time this week talking about the fact that we've got about 30 vacancies in the collection division. Does the cost of collecting these dollars include the cost of positions that we budgeted but did not fill?
Chair Manning, Representative Gongberg, yes. Because we use the legislatively adopted budget.
Mr. Chairman, I just need a moment to assess that. So then theoretically, if we had filled those positions and we had 30 more people collecting money, the cost per dollar would go down because presumably those 30 vacancies would be generating a lot more income.
Chair Manning, Representative Gongberg, I don't believe that's correct. I believe that this reflects what was budgeted for the organization regardless of if the positions are filled or not.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Committee, I apologize. I was a little tardy getting here. It's negotiations time and some good stuff is going on. Quick question for you. My staff was sharing with me that a question was asked earlier about the possibility of collaborating with CPAs and other tax preparers, and the response was lukewarm from you folks. Talk to us about what our CPAs and tax preparers are missing, especially as I look at your KPMs as it relates to helpfulness, timeliness, accuracy, and expertise. What are they missing?
Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, I'll allow Deputy Director Kaus to answer that, but I'd like to first say that to just correct a perception here that has been floating around about this issue, the department is in no ways lukewarm to this idea, and we are entirely supportive of any legislative measures that are passed and are implemented. If we are expected to carry those out, we will do that wholeheartedly. So I'd like to apologize if there's any sentiment that has been conveyed to you about us being lukewarm about this initiative. We are not. I want to go on record that we're not. But we will take this opportunity to clarify any concerns we may have in ensuring that its implementability.
Thank you.
So, Chair Manning, Representative Smith, we've had the opportunity to have lots of conversation about this. We're on board. We just need to talk about how do we make it happen. I think the question is, are we shifting resources or are we adding resources? How are we going to do this to hit what it is that people want? Because what I think we're really wanting to make sure is meeting that frustration and changing the bar so that the bar isn't hitting people at the ankles, but it's getting them where they need to be, whatever body part that is. That's probably a bad analogy, but you get what I'm trying to say, right? So I said it poorly, but...
So what if we could get John and myself and you folks and some folks from the Oregon Tax Preparers Group and sure. the CPA group, and we sit down and we get around a table and talk about how do we collectively solve this issue?
Co-Chair Smith and Manning, we would welcome that. Yeah. And I think that will definitely clarify the needs of the community and allow us to share with them our thoughts to make sure we end up in the right place.
Perfect. And I would invite any committee member, so long as we don't have a quorum, to join who would, if your schedule or time allows. Okay. Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, a comment, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're looking over the KPMs here, and there are interesting and worthwhile questions. How many people file electronically? How long does it take to get a refund? How many people are happy? How many employees are happy? Those are good questions, but it seems to me that there's a larger question missing here, and that is, how much money are we collecting? And how much money are we collecting compared to the amount of money that we think is due to us? I would hope that we could take a look at the question of whether there could be another KPM that addresses the amount of delinquent debt and the tax gap.
Okay. Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, we would agree with you that we don't think these measures hit the mark all the way for our organization, and that there probably does need to be yet another review. You know, we implemented, as I indicated, 6 new measures. I don't believe that the revenue leadership team thinks we hit it. I don't think we did. And I think the point you've made is spot on, and there does need to be further discussion as we go through strategic planning this summer and whatnot, not only to your question and measure, but to other ones in here that we're not so sure they give us the information or data to actually run our organization.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? No further questions. Thank you very much. John, what are we looking forward to going into the future?
Mr. Co-Chair, there's a couple things to note. Tomorrow, the agency will be back for its final day to talk about reduction options and vacancy factors. And also, just to alert the subcommittee, apparently the trees will be being moved tomorrow outside of the window. They have said that the noise level will be low, but the distraction level may be high, so we may need to draw the curtains. So,
especially Mr. LFO, especially because this committee oversees the budget that was involved in moving those trees, so the distraction level may be high.
We can micromanage it.
And, you know, on that point, Mr. Chairman, I look out. I'm 4 floors up, and I look out over the work, and I see them digging a round hole around each of these trees, and I see where they're planning to move them to, and they've dug a square hole to put them in.
The government work.
And Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, if I may, you there as background, we're getting quite a few questions on agency position budgeting, vacancy factors, and things like that. So out on OLIS, Michael posted a legislative fiscal budget brief that some great people in our office put together last summer that walks through what how positions are budgeted in the state, but also there's a good discussion of vacancies and double fills in that, which would be background for tomorrow. So that's out on OLIS. It's also, I've sent it to you via email, so with some other discussion items. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. No further business for the remainder of the day. We're going to give everybody a break and get out of here a little early today. So with that being said, we're going to adjourn, and we will reconvene tomorrow, 1500 hours, 3 o'clock civilian time. We are adjourned. 3 o'clock civilian time. We are adjourned.